Cloudcast Media.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Good day out there, veterans and families, and welcome to Season 2 of Your Next Mission, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. And I always love saying your host because I love this show. We have a great show for you today. In fact, we have an unbelievable show. But before we get started watching, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like us and click on the subscribe button below. We're going to focus on our transition from military to civilian life today, and it's so important for all our veterans to understand exactly what's out there for them. Now, before we get started, I want to thank all of our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and we certainly love them. There's no question about that. As I mentioned, today's theme is about transitioning from the military to civilian life, and I'm so excited, in fact, I'm overwhelmed, to introduce a good friend and a great general officer, Brigadier General retired Peter Palmer, chairman of the Scottsdale, Arizona Veterans and Advisory Commission, a strong veteran advocate. Welcome, sir. So good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jack, or Sergeant Major. I just want to thank you and your organization because transition out of the military is a major life event. So it's great that you're addressing this issue on your show and helping out the veterans.
Well, you know, it's certainly important for all of us, and we're going to get right deep into the weeds about this in just a couple of minutes. You, sir, I know all of our audience, all the people listening now, are really ready or excited to listen to you. But before we do that, I think it'd be important for you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Well, just real quick, I enlisted.
No, real quick. Just take your time and tell yourself.
I enlisted in the Army back in 1972, right near the end of the Vietnam War. Did Fort Dix was basic training, so we had fun there. But then I was accepted to the United States Military Academy Prep School, and then went to West Point and graduated from West Point. I was commissioned as an infantry officer. Most of my assignments were overseas, like Europe, where we first met, and you were mentoring us as a division sergeant major, and I'm a brand new lieutenant. So I remember those days well. Throughout my career, I've pretty much been in ops and plans, but I served in Kosovo doing peacekeeping, and then later in Iraq from 2004 to 2005 as we went through that major change. And after 32 plus years in the military, Sarah and I decided to retire and start our next stage of life. That's why this transition course is because I've gone through a lot of those.
Yeah.
And I ended up working for 8 years with General Dynamics in Scottsdale doing innovative technologies, which was fun because I got to play with universities, research agencies and such. I'm now fully retired and pretty much volunteer for veterans boards, do mentoring and commissions. And my hobby now is dealing with veterans issues now that I'm at this stage in my life. So happy that I appreciate you inviting me because I think this is an important topic.
Yeah, it's funny. You can take you out of the uniform, but you can't take the uniform out of you, I guess, or can't take. Yeah, I'm like you. I'm going to do all I can to help veterans and for the rest of my life and do all that I can to help the veterans and their family members. Sir, can you tell us what's the most important things about a service member must consider when preparing for transition? I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff out there, but yeah.
Well, as you say, there's lots of things, but and again, I actually am involved with formal mentoring of veterans. There's a program, American Corps Partnership, that works. the key is the three things that I think that you will face right up front is first of all, you'll probably have a short-term plan, but you really need a long-term plan. What's your vision for the future as you leave the military? And we can go into that in more detail. But next thing is networking, mentoring, and transition support groups. There's a whole bevy of support out there for the transition you may or may not be aware of. But networking is important, and it becomes important when you're doing your other jobs as well, because it's taking advantage of the people you know, and I say advantaged, that everybody's willing to help you, but networking is key as part of that process. And more on the tactical near term, you're going to have to figure out, is it a job you're going for or is it location? And depending on when you're transitioning, like if you've got family issues that you want to stay in one location, that will dictate the types of job opportunities. But if you're willing to move and be someplace else, then you might have more opportunities. So I'd say if I had to say three things that you wanted to do, it's get that, do those three things.
Yeah. When should you start that transition process? And the question is, I guess, when did you start yours? And when do you think, since you're out right now, when do you think you should start your transition process?
Well, over the years, it's, you know, we've talked 6 months, depending on what type of transition, what you're going to do, I would look at least a year out now after everything that I've seen, because first of all, and this goes to the long-term plan piece that I mentioned. There's things that the military can offer you that you can prepare for and better prepare your transition if you start earlier. So if you have a long-term plan, what am I going to do when I get out, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to go home and find a job kind of thing if I'm, you know, my first term enlistment or whatever. Or if I'm in a retirement job, I'm retiring. Okay, am I retiring early? So I'm going to need money. So you got to think through the plan of what you're going to do, because then you can take advantage of educational programs in the military. You can look for specific transition support pieces. You can also start your mentoring in terms of reaching out in networks to your mentor, because part of it is you need to let industry or the community you want to go into know that you're coming out.
Yeah.
And depending on the industry you're going into, most industries probably are making decisions about 3 months out, but you want to be networking before the 3 months. So, but you got to have a long-term plan. What do I want to do long-term? Where do I want to go? What do I want to be able to do? So, for example, if I've been in the military and I really think I want to teach either in high school or college, well, you might want to get, while you're in the military, get your teaching certificate so they can hire you offward. Or if you're going to be a professor at a college, they're going to want a PhD. So you might want to get enrolled in an educational program before you leave, so you've already met the gates of what that group expects out of you on that. So sitting down and just thinking out, and of course, if you have a family, you've got to talk with the real decision maker in the family about where you're going.
Absolutely.
Where the kids are going to do and set yourself up. So having a plan is critical to that aspect.
You made me think about a lot of things when you were talking. One is education. You touched on, especially for the enlisted corps. I would tell you, I know the answer, but how important do you think education is as far as when you get out of service, even having an associate's, a bachelor's or a master's degree in the civilian market for a job?
Yeah, I will. Okay. And I don't mean to be demeaning on this. Probably goes from our time of working in theater. But when you transition, all these different groups have different criteria for what's acceptable. They have their norms, their social culture. I call them all tribes, because you've got to understand the tribal language. You've got to understand what their value system is. You got to understand, and we'll talk potentially about that a little bit more. These are different cultures and different ideas that aren't normal necessarily to the military cultures and values. So if for example, if you're going to go into a university, you know, a general officer rank is cool, but you really need a PhD. because that's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And you got to understand what's going to be expected. And like I said, the military, because depending on which state you're going into, you can get an education. You can get a teacher certification to teach in high school right away, for example. Or you can teach in community college with a master's degree. But you've got to have those prerequisites to be even considered for those kind of jobs or positions. And you might say, okay, I'm not there yet. So my plan, again, the long-term plan is when I retire or when I get out, I need to go back to school and I need to get such and such degree so I can do the next step. But there's lots of opportunities while you're still in the military to do a lot of those things. And there's resources to help you do that before you get out.
Yeah. Most of the people, and talking on the enlisted side now, most of the people that retire from enlisted, they're at least normally a sergeant first class. What advice would you get to a sergeant first class? You're really talking a lot about general officers and stuff, and I understand that. But let's talk about a sergeant first class. What kind of tips would you give him to?
The key is he or she's still got to think about what type, again, what's your plan? What do you want to do? Okay. Depending on the type of, and again, it goes to which group, because senior NCOs can have great jobs in say training in line with their military experience and training overseas, because there's contractors that need those kind of things. So if you want to keep doing that, you know, if you want to stay at home and not be deployed overseas again, you're going to have to see, do I want to teach high school or do I want to teach college? Because as you know, Sergeant Major, our senior enlisted are getting graduate degrees as they should. And
absolutely.
They've got the capabilities and they, more importantly, they've got the experience.
Yeah.
And the experience is huge. The unfortunate part is some, many of us leave, myself included, we're saying, oh, I've done all of this. I've got leadership. I've got training. Most of industry doesn't really value that proposition because they've got their own system. They got their own leadership kind of pieces. Now, those are skill sets you can use when you get into the job. And many prior military do very well in industry, but that's not necessarily what they hire you up front. They're looking for a specific, you're trying to fill a slot like a specific MOS that I'm using a military term for civilians, but they're looking for you to fill a specific spot, and you've got the criteria to do that. So understanding what that criteria is, especially for enlisted, and I've mentored many enlisted in the ACP program. Most of them were going to school to get the higher level of education before they went out, because one, they were younger, and even a sergeant first class is still young, as you know.
young now, that's for sure.
Well, they're hitting the prime of their career life, too. Uh-huh. So that's a great opportunity. I mean, and of course, if they're retiring versus getting out before retiring, they've got that safety net of a retirement and health care programs and everything else that allows them a flexibility to maybe go out and just go to school and still have an income and stuff to survive with.
Yeah.
So, but you've got to look at the financials and everything else you go through. And that's why a long-term plan that you've looked at your life and you looked it where you want to be and then put it out. I actually saw a movie called King Richard, if you haven't seen it. It's about Venus and Serena Williams' father and how he had a plan, is what he called it. I have a plan for him, and we stick to the plan, and which led to, you know, the breakthrough that they did in the tennis arena. So and they overcame a lot of obstacles as part of that process. But so I argue, and I'm probably biased because I'm a planner, Sergeant Major. So have a plan, and you know, all plans change, but have a plan, but that way you can set yourself up better and you understand the requirements that you're going into.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you one more question. What about a resume? You know, we've talked a lot about it, different things. You really talk about networking, mentoring. And I also think you said 1 year. I think it should be about 2 years when you start that process and really get it going. And I totally agree with the fact about making sure your spouse is involved with the process. But when should you develop when should you start that resume process about putting something together?
Well, like you said, 2 years, a year, depending on where you're trying to go. I'd write a resume. Resume is, and I'll just say this is from my experiences. Resume is that check mark you got to do.
Yep.
It in terms of getting you a job, if you're sending a blind resume out there, your chances of getting the job is reduced. Let's call it that way. That's why I emphasize the networking, because what you want to do is have somebody, you know, whether you've just got out, you know, you just did your first tour and you want to go back and work someplace at home. You want one of your buddies or friends that are working in that industry to talk to them about you, to sell you for you.
Yeah.
Now, the industry is going to require a resume. I mean, they all do, and you can put them up there. But most of the successful transitions I've seen is where you've networked and you've got somebody inside the organization or somebody that knows the organization helping to market you.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's what we're doing. We're marketing each other. And that's one of the important things I try to do for those of us on this side of the service is market and take care of your buddies coming out.
Yeah.
so they because industry may or may not know you. And so you want someone to help you. So resume is important. I would tell you that I had a Navy SEAL that was ended up working for me. But his resume put in there, and if you know the individual, he had a very nice sense of humor, had a military sense of humor, but he highlighted in his resume how he was good at killing people. And I'm going, probably not the best thing to put into a resume for an industry that, you know, you'll play to a bias that's in the community. So, but you know, he meant it as a joke, but that you don't want to joke on your resumes.
No.
No. That's not what you want to do.
No. Did he get the job?
He got the job.
Did he fix his resume?
It's a sad story later on, but you and I can talk about that one online. And it has nothing to do with job. It has to do with he was injured in theater and lost his vision and his smell.
Oh, man.
So, but we were looking at hiring him full time. So
I got to tell you something. You know, I lost my smell when I got out of the service. I had a DVH assessment. So they operated on my nose to fix it. And the result of that is I can't smell anything anymore. In some cases, I think it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, you've hit on a lot of really good things, and I hope the people that are listening today, the mentorship, the networking, you really, I mean, I think about every other word you talked about the importance of networking, and I think you're exactly right. It's the things that are the people that know you when you get out of the service are going to assist you. So I always tell people, don't burn bridges, be polite to people, do your job, work hard, and people will recognize that. Just keep pushing. That's what you got to do.
And understand, service members have a lot of qualities.
Oh, absolutely.
And I will tell you that there are jobs, and I'll give you another example, happened to be another. For some reason, I've ended up mentoring a lot of SEALs, but they were officers, captains, or corrections, naval lieutenants. They were dinged up from injuries and stuff, so they were transitioning. But you get an industry that says, hey, I want somebody leader. I want to change the culture of my organization.
Yeah.
So he got an interview in a company that did fertilizer. But it was a big company. And so they wanted somebody because it was a family run company, but they didn't see anybody in the company that really would carry their legacy. So they wanted somebody to do that. And the Navy SEAL with his leadership and stuff, and he came across well, they brought him in to eventually take over the company, which was a good success story for him.
Yeah. You know, one of the things is really important that the audience, a lot of people don't know much about the military. And they really, I think they struggle sometime when they want to hire a veteran because they're thinking all of us have some kind of post-traumatic stress or, you know, some kind of wounds from war. And that's true. We do have wounds from war. But do you think employers are cautious about that sometimes, about, you know, work?
I'll tell you specifically and working with HR and other pieces, being a general in the executive level kind of discussions, you get involved in this discussions in industry. There's a clear bias biased perception is a better word, of the military coming out and you've heard, you know, technically in HR, they can't, human resources can't ask those kind of questions, but there's always this side wink, nod, nod. Do you think he has PTSD or TBI or something like that? And we'll talk to cultural shock, I think, a little bit later, but okay. I'd like to expound on that because we do get faced with a bias. I would also say you brought up they don't understand the military. And this goes back to the resume. We write, and when I review resumes, we write very good military kind of resumes. So if you're in the military, you will understand what they're talking about. Industry will have no clue what you just said. Okay. When you talk about all the awards and got the best commander's trophy or whatever, no clue what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. This is where you got to understand the tribe that you're going into and what their value system is and shape your resume to meet that value system. Okay. And in industry, it's about, you know, who you know and how you can help them sell a product or how, you know, it's about making your numbers. It's not about, a lot of the things that we think are important. It's what that cultural group thinks is important. And so understanding the cultural group you're going into is important so you can meet that need. But you got to write your resume so it comes out that way.
Yeah.
And that's where you get people that are in the industry or in that piece that can say, okay, don't say it this way, say it this other way. Yeah. And it's the same thing. You've actually got the qualities. It's just how you articulate them.
Yeah. You know, I always tell people you got to have two resumes. You got to have a military resume and then a civilian resume. The other thing I tell people is don't use, and you said it a minute ago, don't use acronyms. Make sure you don't use any acronyms. And the last thing is make sure that you have somebody review your resume. You know, somebody else is already out in the market. And then the last thing is I helped a good friend of mine get a job up in, really, quite frankly, he's up in the Pentagon, and they had a job description. So there's key words, I guess, in that job description that you got to make sure that you're in your resume. So I think those are important things to think about. We're talking with Brigadier General retired Peter Palmer, Chairman of Scottsdale, Arizona Veterans Advisory Commission. And you've been enjoying your next mission with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, I hope you're enjoying this discussion, please like us and click on the subscribe button below. Sir, to continue our discussion, what are some of the things a service member can do to really prepare for transition? We've talked a lot already about this stuff, but is there certain obstacles and things he needs to look at to prepare himself?
Well,
you've
talked the resume, so I won't cover that again. But first of all, you need to get copy of all your records, all your health records, get copy of all your military records, all your ratings, everything else. I mean, they're all available to you, but you're going to need those copies later on because, at least in the healthcare side, those don't transfer over to your local hospital. So they have no history of it. So, and things like your vaccination records. And you got to remember, when you get on the civilian community, you're not going to get a note from the, you know, your platoon sergeant or squad leader or company commander that it's time to get your vaccination done. Okay. You're not, they don't think that way. So you've got to put that piece together. The second thing that, and my sister is a retired Navy captain. Her last job was doing medical boards. And what she highlighted to me that she saw as a problem was you got to apply for your VA before you get out. Because if you don't apply before you get, if you apply before and get in the system before you get out, if you do any benefits, they'll all be retroactive to your retirement date. If you do it after you get out, and I run into a lot of vets, well, I'm not really, I wasn't really hurt, I don't really need it, or that stuff. We all need, you all need to apply for the VA, because when you get to our age, Sergeant Major, things start breaking down, and you have to get them replaced or do that kind of stuff. And the key is the VA offers lots of benefits to you, but you got to be in the system. And if you're not in the system, although it's much easier to get in nowadays than prior, but apply for the VA, get that done before you go. Think of everything that possibly was military, you know, related. And not that they'll give you any percentages, but later on, that part might break down or you might need treatment. And as long as it's military related, they will treat you. And the VA is getting much and much better on that. But it's critical to do it before you get out versus after.
You know,
and there's agencies to help with that.
Yeah, I was one of those people that, you know, when I got out of the service, I didn't, I can make a whole lot of excuses, but I was sort of busy and there's a lot of things going on. I'm trying to move out. And I really, to be honest with you, I didn't have a plan. I was just going to get out and I figured I could work it all out. And it really, I was lucky it did work out for me. But when it came to the benefits, I went and took a physical from the military, and I never took my VA physical, but they sent the documentation over there. And so when I got the stuff, I got like 10 zeros. I didn't get any kind of disability. And I thought, you know, what the heck? That still is something because it documented. 6 years later, 6 or 7 years later, I decided, you know, I want to be a service-disabled veteran-owned company. So I went back and applied, and they gave me, and I went for the, you know, talked to the doctor and all this stuff. They gave me 30%. They gave me 10% for post-traumatic stress. And I said, something's got to be wrong with this picture. So I appealed the process, and it took me, I think it took me over 2 years on the appeal, and to come back and they gave me 50+%, and then I said, well, this is crazy. So I went back again and I got 80%. So I think the key, and you really just said it, you need to make sure that you do that before you ever get out of the service, and make sure you're prepared to get out. So the other thing, which is critical, I know I can think of many times where I was hurt or something was wrong with me, and I just kept pushing and kept going. But you got to make sure you get it documented in your medical records. And the other, and some great advice that you gave the audience here is make sure you get copies not only of your records but also your family records.
Families, yes,
that's right.
Absolutely.
Because you got to make sure that they have all their stuff. And just important. The other thing I think is you've touched on a lot of really great things is making sure I moved. I tried to move my family a little bit early, you know what I mean? So I got them in a position mm-hmm. before I ever got out of the service. You think that's a good idea for people to sort of place their family out in a home before they ever, you know, just get things going, I guess?
Well, again, Sergeant Major, I would say what's your long-term plan?
Yeah.
What are you trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Because if you're, remember I said job or location.
Mm-hmm.
If you place your family in a location, you're saying that's where I'm going to be.
I'm stuck.
And that cuts down your job opportunities.
Yeah.
So, by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you just got to have a plan that's what you want to do. And you know, by the way, the plan might be, you might be told what your plan's going to be by your better half.
That's true.
We will be in North Carolina. Yeah. I mean, that's where you're going to be. Okay, all right, now I got that figured out.
Well, that's really, quite frankly, that's how it happened to me. I had our grandkids who were in Florida. And I said, where do you want to go? She said, Florida. I said, what about me?
Yep.
She said, well, I want to go to Florida. So and the other thing, which is different now, and this is in our country, is most people work from their homes. There's a lot of people working out of the homes and do a lot of different stuff. So a location sometimes is important, depending on what kind of job that you have.
Kind of job, but you're right, especially with the COVID situation, the remote work is there's lots of opportunities there, and I'm seeing a lot more of people. And some of the companies I advise, they actually are going to do away with their offices because they can get more done and they don't want to pay the overhead for an office space. So there's opportunities that way. I would put it into what's my plan. If I really want to be like the one I'm mentoring right now, which is a Coast Guard captain, he wants to stay in the Virginia area. Well, Virginia area has lots of opportunities for retired military, so that's helpful. But the family decides in many cases what you're going to do, and which is fine. That's just make sure you have a plan on what you're going to do there.
Yeah.
I do want to go back to the VA piece just to highlight, because
sure, absolutely.
Again, my sister was mentoring me during this process. She says, if you just send your paperwork in, sort of like what you said, it'll come back zeros because, you know, they're going to do a quick review of your records and they will go, okay, I don't see anything. She said, go through your records and highlight everyone and make sure they know what you're saying was military related.
Yeah.
So I went through my records from all those years and they were pretty thick records after 32 years. And there's things you don't think about that really wasn't an issue, but it was good you put it on there because they at least acknowledged it if they didn't give you a percentage. Mm-hmm. So you got to be your own salesman on this and make sure that you've captured that piece.
Yeah.
And one other thing, it's critical, especially in nowadays world, you got to clean up your social media. Businesses review your social media. So depending, you know, Facebook, whatever you're on, they'll go out and query that. And things you say, whether jokingly or otherwise, could come back to hurt you in terms of the jobs.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we aren't all politically correct all the time. We aren't socially correct all the time. And sometimes if you do that on social media, it could work against you. Yeah. So you should go back and clean it up.
You know, in some cases, I don't think you can clean it up. I think once it's out there, which is really sort of scary. I learned a long time ago, don't never say anything you don't want everybody to hear and be selective about. So I think I get a lot of social media stuff and I do things, but I think I'm more positive than negative. And I try not to, if somebody says something negative, I just sort of ignore it and don't get involved because it's not a good idea to sort of get down in the mud and do things. I went through some public affairs training one time, and they was telling me about, you know, how do you deal with people and how do you answer questions and stuff like that. So I don't know if I'm cautious. I guess I'm selective. If something's wrong, I'm going to say something about it, but I'm going to be very professional about what I say.
Professional.
That's right.
I'm
not going to attack anybody and... In fact, I remember when I was Sergeant Major of the Army, I got a note from somebody, and he said I was the worst selection in the world as a Sergeant Major of the Army. It was about a specific thing that went on, and somebody said, what are you going to do about it? I said, nothing. What do you want? You know, he just wants to, or whoever it was, that just wants to engage me in an argument. So I'm not going to lower myself down to their area. You know, sir, I love talking to you. I think I could talk to you a couple hours about this stuff. That's for sure. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And you've been enjoying Your Next Mission.
You're watching Your Next Mission, proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and we're blessed to be here today with Brigadier General retired Peter Palmer, Chairman of the Scottsdale, Arizona Veterans Advisory Commission, and a great advocate for our veterans, talking about transition. I want all of our listeners to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. I want to hear about all the good things and even the bad things so we can help our veteran community. Tell us what topics you'd like us to cover. You can also text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll reach out to you. Or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. Sir, you're ready to jump right in there.
On my transition, and one thing we might talk about, there's lots of reason from transitioning the military, as you know. It's my term's up. I don't like the military anymore. I like the job, or the military tells you to go. There's lots of reasons to transition, family issues, everything else. Personally, as a general officer, I'm just giving you my decision piece, because as a general officer, I mean, you serve at the pleasure of the president. You don't even think about transitioning.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for general officers, they do require you to attend a transition course. Whether you're getting out or not, it's a mandatory requirement. I did a little late in my career because I was in theater at the time and, and assistant division commander. So I took it kind of late. But my your wife comes with you, and we were looking at it. And they were highlighting of, you know, you need to think about when you want to transition and not necessarily have the military decide when you have to transition. But again, we went through that timeline, and my wife and I, based on, again, I'm a planner, so I did have a semi-long-term plan. I figured it was time, and to be honest, Sergeant Major, I was worn out from deployments and everything. It was just time. I just didn't know. I had another general officer said, yeah, I just decided to submit and resign. I said, I go, can I do that? I didn't even know I could do that. So, but the bottom line is I decided to retire. And of course, a lot of your mentors try to keep you in, but it was time. I did have sort of a long-term plan of where I wanted to go. But I didn't know what I specifically wanted to do. So I started about a year out in my case. And I didn't have a plan when I decided to get a specific job or anything. I looked at universities, teaching, because I'd been a professor at one time. I looked at defense industries. But I just reached out to my current bosses and old bosses and just asked them, what do you advise? What should I be thinking about? How do I do this? And General Oley, I don't know if you remember him, but he served as a head of HR once, and they says, oh, go see him. So he sat me down and walked me through all of the things that I should be considering and what it means, because he translated a lot of the industry speak so I'd understand it. And I was lucky enough to be recruited by three companies, and two in Boston and General Dynamics out in Arizona. And we went to the Boston one, and my wife always worked. So she actually was being looked at for a job at Natick because of her background. She was a budget officer and did the, but we were walking through the, BX at the Air Force Base in Boston, and they had these machines all up and down. You know, the BX doesn't buy a lot of stuff unless it's going to sell. Mm-hmm. And these were all big snow blowers. And my wife and I looked at them. These are all snow blowers, and these are not small snow blowers. Yeah. I'm not sure we want to be in Boston, but it's Scottsdale weather was much nice, as Ted would know. Yeah. Actually, the job offer was a wonderful job officer by General Dynamics, and the Boston ones were too. But those other kind of things feed into your decision.
Absolutely.
Networking, it was because of my previous job in the Army. I had already run into industry a lot. So they are, what I also found out is industry definitely recons military people, not just officers, but NCOs too. Mm-hmm. And you gain a reputation. So if you're acquisition corps, if you're NCO, when you're working with industry, just understand you're also creating a reputation with that piece. So it's something I'd advise you to be, as you said earlier, just be professional. Okay. Because in some cases you hold the life of that industry if you hold that job, but just be professional about what you do.
There you go.
The other thing is which I had to walk through because I didn't understand, is all the different compensation benefits that you need to consider, because those can be differentials. And one thing I always advise, because I was advised, is we all get 30 days vacation when we're in the military. Sort of, we work all holidays, but we get the vacation. But the key is industry, when you come in new, and I'm thinking defense industries in this case, but it's pretty true for the others, is you get 2 weeks because you're a new employee.
Yeah, sir.
So when you're doing the negotiations, you may not be able to get more money or may not get something else. Just say, look, I'm used to 30 days of vacation. You're offering me two. Can you give me 30 days? Now, their vacation's a little different than ours because you do get the holidays, the weekends don't count, that kind of stuff. So, but the key is that's a negotiable piece that industry might say, okay, yeah, I'll give you, because assuming they want you, they'll they'll maybe sway on that piece, and it really doesn't cost them that much to do that. So just little things like that, understanding all the compensation benefits that you can potentially ask for, and most companies have them all set up for you.
Even your medical care. Yeah, in your TRICARE, you got medical care, so you get additional money. Sir, we're heading into our final segment with you today, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. I've certainly enjoyed talking to you about, and I know the people listening, you've assisted them a great deal. And I just have a couple more questions. You know, we talked about culture shock and how does that apply to service members in transition in military to civil life. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and just a little background up front. When I was at TRADOC working for General Wallace at that time frame, we made the assumption that, well, we have concept documents on how we fight and how we use stuff and everything else. And a concept document is critical for getting new capabilities for the Army. So this is all the bureaucracy, and you know all of that stuff there, Sergeant Major. But we didn't have a concept document on the human. And what the human is and where do we want to go with the human. So, you know, everything from who do we assess, but the cultures we meet in theater and everything else. So we came up with a human dimension concept, and I was asked by General Wallace to go write requirements for human dimension concept, which got me into, let's say, lots of sciencey kind of stuff like neuroscience and physiology and stuff like that. But it also put me onto PTSD and TBI for working for then Chief of Staff of the Army, General Casey. My job was to work requirements with the docs doing that. So I got a pretty heavy dose on what is PTSD, what is TBI, what is culture, what is moral injury as we go through this. All this stuff that, you know, I sat with a DARPA neuroscientist for 3 years. And the DARPA neuroscientist was supposed to be a 30-minute meeting, and it ended up being a three-hour meeting. And I was amazed at what I didn't know about the brain and how it affects us as soldiers. So what I found out with industry is they're a different culture. We neurally wired our people for Army values, for duty, honor, country, selfless service, is just like we're doing now. You know, we see selfless service and continuing to serve our nation and our soldiers afterwards. That's not necessarily the civilian culture you're going into. And especially in the academic world, if you're going to be a student, it's a different kind of culture you're going into. And we're finding that our soldiers are running into conflicts there, and they're being perceived as having PTSD or TBI, when in reality, it's really what we call culture shock. When you go into a new culture, you're expecting one thing, and it's not like you think it should be.
Yeah.
And especially the kids that, you know, have been in a squad, they've been fighting for 10 deployments or whatever they've been on, and they've always had their buddies there, and now they don't have anything. And they walk into an environment, and they don't have the same support mechanisms. The value systems aren't the same, and they're struggling. And that gets misinterpreted as being something, as a medical condition, when in reality, it's a cultural transition piece. So that's an important thing, that, and we've worked with universities and studies on that. There's information. I would argue the Army doesn't do a good job of transitioning, that aspect of transitioning and preparing people.
I think one of the problems is, you're really right. I think it took me, I don't know about you, but it took me a couple of years to probably fit in. I'm not sure I ever fit in. The other thing is, when you go to school, I would think that some of the senior non-commissioned officers that go to school, and even the soldiers go to school, they're looking for leadership and guidance, and in some cases, they may or may not find that. So that's I can understand how that'd be a little tough. Sir, recently I read your paper, it talked about quality of life. Can you talk about how that applies to transitioning?
Well, I'm trying to capture the experience. Again, planner, you got to put it into some kind of form, I guess. But based on my experiences and working with a lot of others, it originally started off, as you know, Sergeant Major, we as general officers had to do funerals for service members that died in theater.
Yeah.
And it became very aware that a lot of the families one, they weren't properly prepared for it. Mm-hmm. Two, they didn't know all their benefits. So I started writing a manual to capture that and help people in that, you know, how to do a military funeral, how to do that stuff. But it grew, And what I've put together here recently is a quality of life manual that goes through all the planning and prep piece where you ought to be. You got to look at your financials so you understand and all of that piece. But we added a section on all the major transitions that I'm calling major transitions when you leave the military. Transition from the military, transition to full retirement, which there's a whole lot of things that occur there. Transition to assisted living or caregiving that people don't plan for well at all, but 80% of us end up that way. And then, of course, the big transition and passing and all the things and what's going to be left on your family and loved ones and how do you prep so that that's not as big a piece. So I've tried to put together a quality of life manual that actually I wrote it for my West Point class that we're updating. But this, ideally, I'm trying to use that to help have a manual to look at all that long-term planning I talked about. Take a look at this manual, think of the long-term aspects, every aspect, and then put together your plan. Yeah. So hopefully that will help people. What I'd encourage you and your viewers, if they view that, if they can get access, and I'm happy to provide it to anybody, but I would love their feedback on what they learned so I can pass those lessons learned on in the manual to others.
There you go. Okay. Sir, can you tell me about your transition? I mean, how did that go?
I got very lucky, Sergeant Major. I mean, like I said, I didn't know what I was going to do, but I had industries because I didn't know it at the time, but I had built up a positive perspective with industries and given what I'd worked on, because I worked all the science and technology requirements and I worked accelerated requirements. And so I wasn't an acquisition guy, but I was familiar with all the programs and stuff. So I had the defense industry and I had research industries all interested. And General Dynamics was looking to create an innovation group, and they offered me the opportunity to go build this organization, which we started with a couple labs, but we ended up with 13, both national and international. And innovation's great as long as the government's asking for it. But when they don't ask for it, it's tough to give it to them.
Hey, sir, first of all, let me say it's been wonderful talking to you, and you've shared a lot of great information with our listeners, that's for sure. Any final thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience that maybe you didn't talk about or even I didn't ask you about? Hopefully you got something there.
No, the emphasis on the long-term plan piece, the networking, network, but also think of the mentors. And as you and I have talked, I saw you as an earlier mentor for me. I can still remember sitting in the mess hall drinking coffee and you advising this young lieutenant on things he should be thinking about. and you did it so professionally. It's amazing the people you impacted on that piece. So I always appreciated that. And then the last thing is the culture shock. People are not prepared for that. You got to think about that. And it's more so because it can put you in a bad place if you don't recognize that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And a bad place means I think it contributes to some of the suicide issues and other issues and the mislabeling of what's who you are and what you're just. You bring great values to the American community. Yeah. Selfless service is not a universal value system. Yeah. So,
well, God bless you, sir. And thanks to bringing in retired Peter Palmer for being on the show today. I can't thank you enough, sir. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major. I mean, you've been enjoying your next mission, and thank you for being with us today. Please visit our website at yournextmission.org. And leave me a review. Hopefully it's a good review. I don't want nothing negative. But if it's a bad one, I can take that too. You can also visit our partners there who can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. And also, please visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs that are available for you. Please know we want to assist you any way we can. Please follow me on all my social media channels. I never thought I'd ever say any of that stuff. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed our discussion with Brigadier General retired Peter Palmer, please like us and click on the subscribe button below. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Brigadier General Retired Peter Palmer, and for being with us today. It was just really great having you on the show. And I want to leave you with three things to remember today. We're dedicating this season two to your next mission to all of those veterans and family members who struggle with mental illness, which so often has led someone to taking their own life. Please reach out to somebody you haven't spoken to within a long time just to check up on them, to see if they're okay. You know, we're all part of a family, and we all need to continue to take care of each other. Second, I'd like every veteran, I'm really pumped up about this, I'd like every veteran to wear your hat. I got my hat on here today that says U.S. Army, but I want you to wear your hat every Friday and wear it on your military birthday or your service birthday. But if you do that, send me a photo of you wearing your hat, and I'll put it on my social media channels. And then the last thing, I really want to everyone there to reach out to your neighbor. Offer a smile, offer a helping hand. Together, let's try to bridge this divide that has affected so many of us. You know, we live in a great country, and there's a lot of great people, and just help each other. A smile goes a long way. Again, thanks for being with us today, and thanks to Cloudcast Media, and of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvert Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans. We appreciate all you do for our military. See you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.
Cloudcast Media.